In Richmond, Virginia last week on Monument Avenue, a hologram of George Floyd was transposed over a statue of Confederate General Robert E. Lee. It was part of what's being called a monumental change, the George Floyd Hologram Memorial Project. And it's just one of the many ways activists and city officials throughout the country are reimagining spaces where Confederate monuments once stood. Ada Pinkston is also an artist thinking about what these new spaces will look like. She teaches at Towson University, and she's a 2020 fellow with the Philadelphia-based public art studio Monument Lab. And she joins us to talk about the challenges of deciding what happens to spaces where these statues are coming down. Ada, welcome to Here and Now.
Hello. Thank you for the invitation.
So have you gotten any closer to the answer for this really big question? What does a monument for everyone look like? And where should it be? Or is it easier right now to describe what you don't want to see in a monument replacing a Confederate one?
I would say, honestly, this moment in time is about imagining a future and dreaming something better than there was before, right? So I actually started this project in 2016 in Baltimore, and I got a little micro grant. And this particular micro grant was only $700. And I literally just facilitated two workshops close to Maryland Institute College of Art, where I asked people, what do monuments look like in the future? What is your favorite landmark in the city? It's kind of something that people pass by and ignore and don't really look at that often.
Mm-hmm. Which I would guess that really gives you a sense of then what monuments mean to people and maybe perhaps what they could mean for people.
Right. Since 2016, since I started this project, I have over 300 different responses that I've gotten from people in Baltimore and in DC and also in Dallas, Texas. So I put all of these responses into an Excel spreadsheet, and a lot of people's responses have been saying that, okay, monuments in the future would have some form of technology in it. And I think that's really interesting because if you think about the history of monuments and the history of architecture, right, there's always this desire to be on the cutting edge of architecture.
I'm thinking about what you were saying about technology and how people were saying that in the future they do expect for there to be some sort of technological component. And I mentioned the George Floyd hologram that was recently transposed over that statue of General Robert E. Lee. It also followed the route of the 1961 Freedom Rides, replacing Confederate statues as kind of a symbolic call to continue this fight for racial justice. What strikes me about this is that it's such a multidimensional approach that is evolving and moving and traveling. Did you find this in your research that people were thinking of it in those terms as well? Or are you thinking of it in this way?
I would say both. So there are some people that are thinking of it in these terms. There are some people that are thinking of it in terms of, like, there's so many figurative statues of white men. Why don't we make a bunch of figurative statues of women or more figurative statues of people of color? But I think you can't dismantle the master's house with the master's tools. So when we're thinking about the concept of creating counter narratives, I don't think it makes sense to think about another static object in the place of... Yeah. You know, one of the reasons why we create memorials is to think about the past in a more meaningful way and to acknowledge the past and to, you know, to really meditate on a moment in time. So specifically in Baltimore City, where I'm currently, when the four Confederate monuments were removed, there were so many different task force and meetings to consider, like, what sculpture, what public art is going to go in the place of these four monuments that have been removed, right?
Right.
And there was no resolution because no one could ever come to an agreement.
Which really speaks to something deeper about the significance of monuments, but also when you try to make a monument for everyone, it's going to exclude some people.
Right, exactly. The problem also with the monument is that, you know, we change, like societies change over time, you know? So then I was like, well, what if there was a monument that could change over time and that could be crowdsourced? And I developed a sketch for what this monument would look like. And actually, you know, I, at this moment in time, I'm like, well, this is a dream because it would take a lot of funding and also some very serious engineering, but there's different types of filament that you can put in a 3D printer. The vision is to create a crowdsourced monument that changes according to public's interaction using a filament that could melt and take another form every year. So it would be like every year the public would vote on a concept, and then every other year, the public would vote on a design. So it would be a open-ended design. Anyone could submit a design. And then the design would go into the printer. And then technically, that printer would print this large-scale monument that would be crowdsourced.
That's an interesting idea. So you're doing performance art in spaces where Confederate statues have been. In one, you actually play audio of civil rights activist Fannie Lou Hamer describing getting asked to pick cotton when she was a child. Let's listen.
And the landowner asked me could I pick cotton. And I told him I didn't know. And he told me he wanted me to go to the field that week and pick 30 pounds of cotton. I went to the field.
You actually play this audio as you stand on a pedestal outdoors in an antebellum hoop skirt with a veil on your head, moving as if you're a statue coming to life. What do you want people to take away from seeing this type of live action monument?
So really, all of these public performances and interventions are an example of embodied monuments. And I literally am thinking about the ritual of connecting the past and the present. And literally, I just want people to consider the monuments that exist in us, you know, like our grandmothers, right? Or our great-grandmothers, or our great-great-great-grandmothers, where the stories, these stories exist in griot traditions, right? But how do we keep those stories going?
It's so interesting you use the language intervention, which can you explain what you mean when you say that?
If you see someone that is doing a dance on a space where a statue normally would be, then it's an intervening in the way that a person normally experiences that public space, and therefore through that intervening it creates a moment for reflection and to reconsider the possibilities of that space.
But you know what strikes me about your work is that it could be thought of as performance art, but it's also in the tradition of Black people. You mentioned in the Creole tradition, in the tradition of being able to have something that is living and moving, sharing stories and those types of things. But it's never in the way of a monument that stands there and is made of something that that keeps it in one place. What you're saying is what we need to do is just reimagine the idea of the monument and thinking of it in the ways that people live, in the way that they share and pass down their histories, whether it's through oral history, whether it's through performance art. This is all a way to commemorate.
Exactly. And honestly, it's as we're talking, it's actually crystallizing some things in terms of when I began this project, which was after spending a month in Mississippi because my grandmother was sick. And I was there, you know, going back and forth to the hospital. And one of the things that I recognized in more of my adult years was that the architecture of all of these Confederate monuments were like pristine and well kept, whereas a lot of the infrastructure of the city around these monuments were not well kept. And I don't really think we can reconcile our memories, or I don't really think we can remember the past through recreating this static understanding of history, because there's no way, right? It's impossible.
Well, Ada Pinkston, thank you so much for sharing your work with us. This is definitely an ongoing conversation, and we look forward to following it. Ada Pinkston is an artist who teaches at Towson University. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thanks for taking the time.